And on that peninsula, there was that's what Rome. That's what happened. This is a Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Nun Vav Amud Beis. And then the next line of the Gemara says, "B'masnisa Tana." We learned in a different Mishnah. Also, ayom shehichnis Yeravam shnei egle zahav. The day that Yeravam ben Nevat, who was the first king of the ten tribes, and the day that he set two golden calves, echad beBeisel v'echad beDan. One of them he set up in the city of Beisel, which was near the border of Yehuda, the kingdom of Yehuda, and one in Dan, which is up north. So Tsarif Nivnet Tsrif Echad, the first encampment, the first Tsrif, the first shack, was built. Vizehu Italia Shel Yavan, and this was Italian of Rava. This is Italy. This is basically Rome. So basically, what the Gemara was telling us, very interesting, is that everything, what we do today, acts that we do today, could have effects on the Jewish people even many years later. Shlomo HaMelech, when he married Bas Paro, it was something wrong. It was something that he should not have done. I don't know how big of an avera it was. But Chazal tell us it was not the proper thing that when Shlomo married Bas Paro, it was just not right. Shlomo Melech, when he married Bas Paro, the day he married, so Chazal tell us that Gavriel put a stick in the Mediterranean Sea, and that ended up being the peninsula of Italy. But it's an amazing thing because, you know, Shlomo Melech, who would have known, who would ever know? Who would associate this except from the Gemara that here the king of the Jewish people, the king of the Jewish people made a mistake. He did a wrong thing in judgment, which ended up, which would end up about 1,000 years later, a little less than 1,000 years later, would end up with being the place of where the most powerful empire would eventually destroy the second Beis HaMikdash. And I guess it also brings in that when Yeravam ben Nevat, who was the king of the ten tribes, which was shortly after Shlomo HaMelech did what he did, in terms of years, probably about 40 years later, because Shlomo was king for 40 years, and after Shlomo died, there was a split between the Northern Empire and the Southern Empire. Yeravam became the king of the Northern Empire, and in order to stop the Jews from going back to the Southern Empire, to the Beis HaMikdash, so he said to the Jews, why do you have to go back to Yerushalayim? Why do you need to go there? We'll set you up over here. We'll set you up and we can come and pray to Hashem and serve Hashem here. And he set two golden calves, and one in Beisel and one in Dan. And when that happened, that's when Rome was first started. That's the first Srif, it's the first inhabitants of Rome. So you see, just based on that, I wonder, you could imagine, what was it that caused the Greeks, you know, to become of age? Or what was it that became Spain or Germany? You know, what was it in our history that we may have done right or wrong? And then you could do it the other way too. What is it, things that we're doing right, that are causing good things to happen? And I would like to just something that I thought of is that in 1492, there was the decree of Ferdinand and Isabel. Actually, it was much further, but they were the kings at the time, the king and queen at the time of Spain. And they exiled the Jews. They gave all the Jews at the time a choice to convert or leave. Right? This is the Spanish Inquisition. And from that time on, even before, there was known as the Spanish Inquisition. Spanish Inquisition wasn't for Jews, but it was for Jews that had converted to Christians. And if they felt that they were lapsing back to becoming Jews, they were treated very harshly. But on the same day, the Jews were told that they had to leave Spain. It happened to have been the day of Tisha B'Av. So on the day of Tisha B'Av in 1492, the last day, the Jews all had to get on boats
and they all had to leave the country. I guess they all waited the last day. Maybe something would change. The one who was working on change was a person by the name of the Abarbanel, who was the finance minister of Ferdinand and Isabel, and he was making headway. And I think it was Torquemada, who was the his private Rosh Hashiva, the big priest over there. So Torquemada talked them out of it. He says, "What, for some money you're gonna give it to Jews?" So in any case, the decree stood, and about a half a million Jews who were in Spain at the time, about half of them converted, and about half of them decided to leave everything behind. And it was on Tisha B'Av that they left, and the harbor was filled with boats. And I didn't read it myself, but somebody told me that the log of Christopher Columbus was that he left for the New World on Tisha B'Av of 1492. And he writes in his diary that it took him a long time to get out of the harbor because of all of the traffic of all the Jews going out. So here in 1492, at the time when the Spain was kicking out their Jews, at the same time they were sending out somebody who would eventually discover a new world, which 500 years later, Jews. So however you want to put that into perspective in terms of this idea of things that happen at a certain time have an effect many, many hundreds of years later. Just one more. There's another Gemara just before we start. So just keep that in mind with history. Actually, it could be a tremendous chizik for us because, you know, here we are. We have so many challenges in front of us, and you never know what the effect of our challenges are, you know, what the effect of our actions are. You know, if we do good, who knows? We may not be around to see it. Shlomo Melech and Yoram ben Nevat, it was like 800, 900 years after what they did was the full effect of their actions. So it's the same thing, and for the positive too, and positive it's even more so. The other Gemara that I have over here is just a Gemara in Kedushin, and the Gemara says that Sarakavim Ashiris Yardu Liolam, nine measures of riches came to the world. There's a whole bunch of nine, ten measures. We're probably all more familiar with the ten. This one says ten measures of riches came down to the world. Tisha Nutlu Romayim, and the Romans took Romim Hakadmonim. The earlier Romans took nine measures of it. V'yachad kol ha'olam kulo, and the rest of the world had to share the last one. I guess if you say the United States is still part of, we are in the exile of Edom. I don't know if we're still the heirs of the Roman Empire, but this Roman Empire is going to be tremendously tremendously wealthy, and at their height they exploit the entire what we know as the entire civilized world, and they become very, very, very wealthy. Okay, so just as a quick background, let's just go to the. Did you skip one? Or is this the first one that came? Okay, that's it. Okay, 600 BCE. There was a little. We have records of little cities of Rome. I think Rome is built on is one of the seven. There were seven hills. To the west of, I forgot the name of the mountain range, but there were like seven hills, and Rome, the little city, started on one of them, and eventually it encompassed all seven hills. But to the north, it's at one point about 600 BCE, they were taken over by the Etruscans, if I'm saying it correctly. And they picked up a lot from the Etruscans. Picked up the Latin, but I'm not sure. But I don't know if it was their language to begin with. Let's just go further. That was 600 BCE. There's not too much we have to say about that. And a number of years later, they overthrew them, closer to about 500 BCE. I'll just click again. Just keep in mind at this 500 BCE, this is the height of Greek of the Greek Empire. So, like when Rome was just like first beginning to come to, this is classic. You know, the Greeks at the time already had philosophy, and they already had a democracy and a very cultured people. Okay. Eventually, what happened is that the Romans did not like the kings. The kings abused the people, and the people decided, they said, you know what, enough, we want a different type of government. And they came up with a government known as the Republic, a Republic. This is what, the truth is, this is what we have here in the United States, which is representative, representative democracy, right, which is that Greek had more of a real democracy, which had real people themselves, but here, like we have in the United States, you elected people, and these people represented you. So this is where the first time that we see a republic. This is going to last for a few hundred years, but then as Rome gets too big, it's going to be a problem. Okay? Romans, they were very just a little bit the way it was. They originally made them for themselves a Senate. Now the Senate itself was you could be there forever. I don't think I believe the Senate itself, the Roman Senate, you weren't elected every year. However, above the Senate they had something called a council. Council, there were two council members. One made treaties and one led in the wars. That's councils. But that was a one year, you were elected for 1 year, a 1 year term. And pretty much that worked pretty good with that, you know, until people started to overstep their bounds. As long as the Senate, you know, knew this is what we do, we make the laws, it's very judicial, very legislative. Executive was more into the councils, but every so, you know, as time passed on, the councils decided to take more power away from the Senate, and the Senate wanted more power from the councils, and eventually there was friction there. What would then happen is, after you were a council, then you were set as a proconsul for a year. So, of the lands that they conquered, and they started conquering a lot of lands, the proconsul, you're their proconsul for a year. Now that was your 1 year to become rich. Because you took over that, when you took over that land, you realize you're only there for a year. So for that 1 year, you would try to milk that country for whatever you could. You would tax them to the hilt, you would just do anything you could, because that's it. You were only elected, you were only a proconsul for a year. And it depends where you are, some countries took it, and some countries we're going to see, like the Jews are not going to, the style is going to change a little bit, the structure is going to change, but they still had this idea of proconsuls, when we're going to get to later on, when the Romans actually take over Eretz Yisrael. As they started conquering lands, so if you notice up here, there are really two or three types of groups. There were the patricians, which these were the patricians, comes from pater in Latin, is father. These were the original settlers. So the original settlers in Rome, they were first class citizens. They got full rights. They get to vote. They got everything. Then what happened is then they had the plebeians. The plebeians were people from who were on the peninsula that they conquered what we now know as Italy. But within the peninsula, they were plebeians, which they had rights, but they didn't have total rights. But they were treated better than other countries. Other countries, when they conquered other countries, they brought people back, and those were slaves. Those slaves really had no rights. Okay, so most of the people were very few were from the patricians, and then you had more in the plebeians, and I guess at some point you're going to have a lot of slaves, and we're going to talk about a rebellion that happened. Okay, so now we're about 451 BCE, and what was happening is that people were going to war, the plebeians were going to war, and they were coming back. And they were saying, "Well, what do you mean we can't vote? What do you mean we don't have any? You know, we went to war for you. We spent a good many years going to war, and we're coming back for nothing." So what happened is they got some concessions. And some of the concessions were is that they were able to vote for something called a tribune. Now, tribunes were people that were voted by the plebeians. And if there were any laws that were set by the Senate, the tribunes were able to say, no, we object. And they got some rights in those terms. I think the tribunes also was an elected position for generally only for 1 year. But what they did is they actually put up, they found about, I think, 12 of these types of stones, which they put around Rome, which told the plebeians what their rights were. So, you know, this is already that far back. So they had, this was so far now, we're talking about it's very interesting. Right, it looks like, I wonder if Michelangelo curved them on top like this. Right. But maybe even the Romans took it, you know, from, I don't know how they would have, or why they would have, but the luchos, as we know it, were square. We just have it all circled because Michelangelo, when he painted it on the basilica, he made it circle. So, you know, he rounded the tops. I guess, artist's license. And now today, you know, you see over here behind this, all over, you see the Ten Commandments are all rounded due to Michelangelo. He also painted Moshe Rabbeinu with horns. So, all right. Things keep going on. Now the Romans begin to expand. So first they begin to expand on the island itself. They go from the blue to the red. The red, they move up to the blue and then down to the pink. And then eventually they make all their way down to the yellow. The yellow were Greek colonies, and eventually they overtook them as well. This is around 380 BCE. Go ahead. Now, what happened is, now they run into a little bit of a problem here. The three big islands, or whatever, Corsica, Sardinia, and Sicily, do one more because it's... let me just go back. Oh, I'm sorry, go back. Anyway, so eventually they took Corsica, Sardinia, and Sicily. Now, if you notice on the bottom of the map, which is in the very navy blue, it was another country by the name of Carthage. And this was a very, very strong, powerful country. And it was a marine type country. They did a lot of trade in the Middle East, especially with the all the way on the coast over here to Israel and with the Greeks. And they were a seafaring country. They were originally Phoenicians, which they started over here with the Sidon and Sidon. And what they did is these people, they eventually moved to North Africa, which is today Tunisia, Tunis, and they started a colony there, Carthage, and eventually it became a very, very big country. And they spread both sides of the African coast, and eventually it made its way all the way into Spain. Okay, so at about 220 BCE, as the Romans now started to expand beyond their own island, so they're going to run into a little bit of a problem. But before that, go on to the next one. Now, the Romans did a lot of things for the world. And one of the things they did is, and believe it or not, maybe we all take this for granted, one of the things that they did, a phenomenal thing, is that they built roads. Now, they needed roads. Roads, you'll see, for many things. These are pictures of actual roads built by the Romans. But there was a chachman building a road. It wasn't just that they, you know, flattened it out, because that's what they did until that time. And in the winter time, or when it rained, it just got muddy. But they needed, you know, if you want to have nice roads for, I guess in those times, wagons and stuff. So you have to build it properly. And they had a whole chachma on how to do it. You had a layer of big stones on the bottom, then you'd fill it in with dirt. And then your top layer of stones, you had like gutters, so to speak, which gutters the waters off. So This is just something that they built a network of roads. If the next one you'll see where their how their network looked like, in about in the CE of the Common Era 14. If you take a look, you see where their roads were. This was their network of roads. Now, the reason why you need roads is obvious. You need roads. It's first of all, it's good for business. That's the way they would say it in New York. I think it's the next slide. One of the reasons what we gain from roads. First of all, it's trade and commerce. The easier you can get across the different places is great for business. Most of the business in the ancient world was done over water. You know, there was, I think every major country, every major city in the world was by a water source, with one exception. Anybody know what it is? Yerushalayim. It didn't have a water source. It was like a very far from a water source. I don't know, one exception, but most cities are built on big major rivers or the seas or whatever nearby that they could. That's how they did their transporting. That's how they moved things around. As a matter of fact, the way the Jews would get from Bavel to the second base of Migdash was they would take the river all the way up into Syria. And then they would come down either the coast, or they would come down the river through rivers. It was mainly the rivers that transported the Jews from Babel. So it also helped unify expanding Roman territories. But that's what they one of the big accomplishments of the Romans. When the Roman Empire fell, one of the things that the barbarians, the tribes did is they tore down the roads. I don't know if they did it because they were so upset with the Romans, or they didn't want them coming back, but that plunged Europe into the Dark Ages for 500 years, like somebody turned the lights out, you know. Okay, so getting back to where we are. Okay, so the one more. So about 220 BCE, which is just about the beginning of the just about the story of Purim, I think, just about the beginning of the second base of Migdash. Was 220 BCE, so now they have they're going to run into problems with Carthage. Okay, let's just keep going. Carthage is on the south. Now, with the Romans and Carthage, there was something called the Punic Wars. Punic is something another name for Phoenician, I think. Okay, so there are three Punic Wars which lasted about 120 years. The first Punic War was about 20 years over in the seas. And basically what would happen is the Romans built themselves a fleet, and the Phoenicians had a fleet, and they would do battles over the sea. And there was no one would ever get a decisive victory over the other for 20 years. Romans would win one, the Carthaginians would win one. How do you say their name? All right. So the Romans decided we got to come up with something. This is just as a side. I heard this as a pshat. Esav got a bracha. His bracha was from Yitzchak. Is al charbacha tisichyu, with your sword you will live. So what's pshat? With your sword you would live. So Pash says, yeah, you live by the sword. You know, we're going to see every emperor is going to be assassinated by the next emperor. But they're a very powerful, very warlike tribe. But another pshat I heard is that the war in general is a tremendous economic booster. In other words, a lot of technology, even here in the United States, in America, only came because of war. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the internet was because they were afraid what happens if our communications are knocked out. So I don't know who exactly it was, but it was because of in a case of a war, let's have a system of being able to communicate. The space, even though let's say air flight, airplanes. So even though the Wright brothers, but it was all developed. It was developed by the Army and the Navy. They took flights, planes. And because of war, they advanced it and made it better, and everything. So war is a motivator for technology. So I heard that's a pshat in Charbacha Sichyu. So here they are. They're trying to. They need a decisive victory against the Carthaginians. So what they do is they decide on building a fleet, And on the fleet, they would have these long boards on their boats. And their idea was is they would get as close as they could to the Carthaginian fleet. And then over these boards, they would run on these boards and fight on the other ships. That was their plan. So the first time they did it, it was an absolute failure. The second time and the third time. And they actually lost three fleets based on this. But the Romans built a fourth fleet. And the fourth time they did it, it worked very well. And they actually destroyed the Carthaginian fleet. And they basically won that part of the war. This was about over a 20-25 year period. So now the Romans have the control of the seas. As a result, they also got a lot of conditions from the Carthaginians, and they gave up. They had to give up like the island of Sicily and Corsica, like a lot of those islands near where Italy was. They had to give that up. The Carthaginians were not ready to give up that yet so much. Also, but actually, there was I forgot his name. There was a Roman, the Carthaginian leader at the time had two sons, Hanniscobal. I don't remember the first son's name, who was the leader, and he made a treaty with Rome, and with him things they kept the lid on, even though for the next 20 or 30 years or so there was no outright war with Rome. The Romans were looking, they went east, and they started looking Greece, and then starting to go to Asia Minor. And the Carthaginians, they started conquering west, which is they came up into Spain. Now, the Romans were very nervous that they didn't want it to go too much into Spain. So again, if this was Carthage, right, so they passed over the Gibraltar Straits, and they were conquering into Spain. This was Carthage. and the Romans, they were working this way. And things were good until when the Carthage died, and he was taken, the next leader was his brother, a man by the name of Hannibal. I don't know if you ever heard of Hannibal. But Hannibal was not looking to be second fiddle to Rome. I don't know if he did it on purpose or it was like, but he did things to get Rome very upset. And he broke a treaty. I don't exactly know what he did, but what he did is he ended up with a state of war with Rome. And he did one of the most unbelievable, remarkable feats that today they have no idea what he did, how he did it. Basically, he took 40,000 men, 36 battle elephants, and all the supplies that you need. And what he did is he made an end run to get to Rome. And what he did is, if you follow the map over here, instead of taking them straight on over through the water, he ended up in Spain and took them over the Pyrenees Mountains. Somehow, he was able to get everything with all the supplies and everything over the Pyrenees Mountains, over the Alps, and he came into Italy from the north. Now, the Romans were totally not expecting that. He shocked them. You know, you come from the wrong direction. Everything is down in the south, and that's it. There was nothing really you could do. It's almost like World War I with the Maginot Lines, you know, with the Germans. They were expecting the Germans to come in front of them, and the Germans went through the Adel Forest, and they came around, and they took the French from behind them, so all the guns were facing Germany, and they attacked from behind. So here they say the same thing too. As you can see, they did one battle after another battle after another battle, and basically, within 15 years, they conquered the entire peninsula, with the exception of Rome. Okay, so, and then they were trying to do, Hannibal was trying to do, he was trying to isolate Rome and trying to tell all those other people, like, you know, just, you know, don't have anything to do with Rome. And he was largely successful, and he would have won everything, except the Romans had another general. And this general, I forgot the name, Scilio. Sounds like a mafioso.
Scilio.
Scilio went, huh?
Scipio?
Scipio. Scipio, or could be. Hold on. I don't know if I have it here. Scipio. I was right. Scipio. So Scipio went ahead. Okay, actually, is the next one. So what they did is, so Scipio went ahead, and he did what they did to him. He got on a boat. He got an army, and he attacked Carthage. Actually, he attacked a place near Carthage. I think a place called Zama. Yeah, a place called Zama, which is near Carthage. People in Carthage got very nervous and scared. And what they did is they sent Hannibal, who's hanging around Italy, and they said, "You better come back because the Romans are here to attack us." So Hannibal came back with his men that he came back, and he fought the general Scipio in North Africa, and he lost. Hannibal lost. And when that happened, so then that's it. The Romans were no more Mr. Nice Guy. They took away, they never were Mr. Nice Guy, but they took away everything from Carthage, and they left Carthage pretty much alone. Carthage was still a powerful nation, but they, in terms of all their treaties, they took a lot. In terms of all their treaties, they took a lot away from Carthage at the time. But this was the end of the second Punic War. Okay, at this time, I think we mentioned Hannibal escaped, and the Romans at this time had a battle with Antiochus III. We mentioned last time, right? And Antiochus III, with Hannibal tried to get things back, and he got the Syrians into a war with the Romans, and they lost. They lost to the Romans as well, and the Syrians, smarting from that war, and were told that they can't attack Egypt. And then so Antiochus the fourth, the next one, decided let's get something out of it, and that's when he decided to take over Eretz Israel. So I think this is where this all fits in terms of the war in Eretz Israel. Okay, let's go. Okay, they led fire. Then what happened is some 50 years later, there was some excuse, whatever it was. You really don't need real excuses for this. The Romans said, okay, that's it. We're taking over. They declared war on Carthage. Carthage was willing to accept all conditions for surrender with one. The Romans said, you have to move Carthage to a different place. That's it. You got to move, and they were able to swallow everything the Romans said except for that. And they had a big battle, and the Romans flattened Carthage anyway. So instead of picking up all the people moving anywhere, somewhere else, there was nobody left to move. So that was it. That was pretty much in 146. It was the end of Carthage. Okay, at this point now, we're talking about 146 before the Common Era. Roman is now a major, major power. Major player. The miracle of Hanukkah was 163 before the Common Era. Now, one of the foreign policies of the Romans was, like the British, who learned very well after them, was divide and conquer. And what they did is they, you know, if there were any other countries that had like revolutions or in them, so the Romans were very supportive of the revolts in these big countries. And that's why when Yehuda HaMaccabee sent a message to the Romans, would you give us support? The Romans were very interested, and they lent them they said, you know, they didn't end up coming and helping him, but they were very supportive of Yehuda and the Jewish revolt, because again, it was a way to weaken the Syrians, who were the big empire at the time. Okay, what then happens is in Rome, there's big upheavals that's going on, because while they were a small country, so could you just see the next slide? What it was? Okay, this is again the pantry of the plebeians. Try the next one to see what the. Okay, now what happened is while we were a smaller nation, so everything in Rome, you know, was working. You had your farmers, and they were making produce, and they would take their produce and they would sell it into the cities, and things were working very nicely. What was happening now is you were getting a lot of slaves coming into the country, and you also had a lot of you know, people who were becoming wealthy. And what was happening is all the people in the countryside, and probably also was exasperated by the Punic Wars, they were they lost their farms, and they weren't able to keep up. Besides slaves coming in, the Romans did a tremendous amount of trade from all the countries around. That's part of their taxes. They were taking taxes, they were taking wheat, they were taking slaves. And all these people in the farms, they were losing their farms. And people who were very wealthy were just buying the farms out. They became very expensive, you know, they were very rich landowners. They were making the money in real estate. You know, some things never changed. The same idea here. So these poor people, these farmers, were coming into the big cities. And basically they had a motto. You know, a lot of money was coming into the country. And, you know, people thought, instead of a work ethic, it was more of a, you know, why should I do any work? And many people, the motto of the plebeians, or the people that were in the city, in the big cities, which had nothing to work for, they said give us bread and circuses, you know. That's when, you know, they started building these big coliseums, and there were these slave fights and gladiator fights, and all these things were going on. But it was these people were not able to manage themselves. And the Senate almost liked it, because, you know, we'll give you the bread, but that bread comes with votes. You know, just some things have not changed. You know, today's day and age, you have the same idea. You know, we'll give you your money, but just, you know, remember we're the party that gave it to you. Okay, so that was one problem. So what's going to happen now in Rome is a lot of problems are going to happen. That was one of them. So there were these two brothers, the Gracchi brothers, Tiberius and Gaius. So one of them decided he went to become a part of a tribune. He was voted in by the people, and the purpose of him to be voted in was to work for the plebeians, to get them land rights. He set a bill in that people can't own too much land, and he tried to set things right for the poor people. He won a second term. In other words, he put it in, people... He's up against the administration. Everybody, you know, people in the Senate were all rich. They really weren't looking to change anything. And he got even a second term. But when they felt that he was too powerful, so they killed him. And 10 years later, his brother started trying to do the same thing. Now, what was also, that was an internal problem. You also had generals trying to, you know, of armies trying to jockey for power, and so the Senate also. So internally there was a lot going on that was not healthy. The society wasn't good. There wasn't a good infrastructure. Keep going. There's is another. Okay. What then happened is there were two generals that took their army and took a war and started to battle Rome itself. And one was Marius, and then Sulla. So one of them actually was the first one. Marius was for the people. And he started his war and tried to get the Romans to listen to the big people. But he was killed. And then within a short time, the next general, Sulla, he was on the other side of the spectrum. He was with the Senate. So he came in and he started to take over. Now, this is the just keep going. So you have a civil war, and eventually Sulla came in. This is about 83, and for 5 years Sulla was there, and any enemy he didn't like, or any people he felt that it was an enemy, he killed. So now we're down to about 78. Our story takes place in about 63. So now we're coming close. Keep going. Besides the civil war, you also had a revolt in Asia Minor. There was a king by the name, again, I don't know how to say the name, Mithridates, and he ended up getting a tremendous alliance. And this is about also in the 86, 85 BCE. And you can notice over here, this was his alliance against Rome. So he ended up in Asia Minor getting a whole bunch of different countries together. And it was like this is a challenge again to Rome. So Rome is having civil wars. They're having the people in, the infrastructure is terrible. They have people, not working. You had trying to right things, right the wrongs. And now you have Mithridates alliance, which is a threat to Rome and their expansion. Keep going. Okay, this was Sulla. Fine, keep going. Social wars, okay. Then, you mentioned this. Okay, by winning the Battle of Porta Colina, Sulla conquers Rome, kills about 40 senators. He starts his own laws. Keep going. Okay, now, 10 years later, you have a lot of slaves in Rome. So there was a person by the name of Spartacus, who was a slave himself, and he led a revolt of slaves. So besides everything else going on now in Rome, and you have a slave revolt. Okay, so Sulla had, I think he died in 78, but it was the effects of that, and then you have Spartacus. Now, comes a general by the name of Crassus. Crassus is going to be important because he's going to be part of a triumvirate between him, Pompey, and Julius Caesar. So Crassus comes down, puts down the Spartacus revolt with the aid of Pompey. 6,000 slaves are killed. Crassus and Pompey, as a result, are elected consuls. Remember what we said consuls are. The Senate elected for one-year terms consuls, and these consuls are, they're supposed to make the treaties and lead in the wars. If the Senate says go to war in this country, so the consul's job was to go to war. Make a treaty, they're supposed to make the treaty. So this is in 70 BCE. Now, Pompey is on his march now. In 67, now in that time too, they were now having problems with pirates. Okay, pirates were coming and they were attacking. Even they were even so bold to go on the Italian island and attack little cities, port cities, and attacking them as pirates. So Pompey, after helping put down the Spartacus revolt, 2 years later he goes ahead and fights all of the pirates. He goes ahead and makes a successful campaign against the pirates and puts them out of business. Keep going. And this is 67. Then, after that, he goes on a campaign and takes his army and he defeats the Mithridates alliance, I can say there. So that alliance he takes out as well. Now, that alliance was weakened, I think, by Crassus a number of years earlier, but he goes ahead and he finishes them off. He then comes down south to Syria. Now, I remember I mentioned Syria. Remember Syria? This used to be the all-powerful country when the four of Alexander's generals divided the world. So Syria was the base of one of the generals. This was the most powerful country in the world. About 100 years later, it was like there's nothing left to it. So he goes ahead and Pompey just annexes it, makes it become part of Rome. And then in 63, this is when the brothers are fighting. And now we caught up to our story of where we left off last time. This is when the two brothers, Aristobulus and Hyrcanus, were having their fight. Aristobulus had Well, just to review, when Queen Shalamis passed away, she had two sons. Hyrcanus was the Kohen Gadol, and he was more of a mild-mannered type of a person. Aristobulus was a little more of a hothead and a forceful type of a person. Aristobulus ended up taking all the forts, and he ended up with the army, and he forced, or he just basically overtook Hyrcanus. And if that could have been the end of it, and it would have been, for the Jewish people, it would have been great. Hyrcanus would have been the Kohen Gadol, and Aristobulus would have controlled the country. But we mentioned last time that Hyrcanus had an advisor, I don't know how to say his name, is it Antipater or Antipater? But he was an Idumean from the south that was conquered, and the Idumeans were conquered by Alexander Yanai, and his foreign policy was to take conquered people and convert them. So he was actually an Eved Kanani, so to speak. When they say convert him, they made him into Eved Kananim. And he was Hyrcanus' advisor, and he advised Hyrcanus to attack Aristobulus. And Hyrcanus actually went, and he got himself an army. And before they see Hyrcanus coming in, they didn't know his designs, and they opened up the gates of Yerushalayim. And here he is, and Aristobulus and his men had to go behind the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. So now Hyrcanus was in Yerushalayim around the Beis HaMikdash, and Aristobulus and his men were holed up. They were in the Beis HaMikdash itself, and they were fighting each other. I mentioned last time that they would send money over and bring in karbanos and send up karbanos. And they at this point, they sent the... this was about 67, 66, where Pompey was still in Asia Minor. But Pompey sent one of his proconsuls, I'm not sure how to call him, to see, just go one further, let's see, I may have it on the next slide. These are some of the other things that Pompey did. He conquered the king of Armenia, conquered Tigranes, and he made a triumvirate, which we're going to get to a little later. But keep going one more. Keep going one more. Okay, and one more. This is where I left off. This is what we said last time. This is what the country looked like when the two brothers first became, when Shalamis died. This is how big the Judea was. One more. Okay. Okay, and this is the... keep going one more. Okay. I mentioned Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, Hyrcanus and Antipater. He escaped to Petra, formed an alliance, and they came back to take Yerushalayim. One more. Okay. Now, first, it doesn't say over here. Okay. I mentioned all this as well. Okay. They surround the... one more. Keep going. Okay. What, there it is, Scarius, that's his name. So what Pompey did is, before he got there, he sent his a deputy, Scarius, to deal with the situation. And what Scarius did is, when they came to Scarius, basically the bigger bribe was given by Aristobulus. Aristobulus' side gave the bigger bribe, and Scarius said to Hyrcanus and his men, leave him alone, stop the siege, and go away. So basically, at that time, Aristobulus won, at least, you know, with the blessing of Rome, that Hyrcanus backed off. But they weren't done yet, because Pompey eventually made his way down into Judea. And when he went, then when he made his way down into Judea, so let's go on to the next one. So he has a different way of settling the affairs. He basically sides with Hyrcanus. Basically, he realizes that for himself, Hyrcanus is a much weaker individual than Aristobulus. Plus, another advantage is that Hyrcanus has his advisor is Antipater, who is not really a Jew, who is a slave. And Pompey felt that he can gain the most out of Hyrcanus. So he sides with Hyrcanus, When that happens, and now Aristobulus, realizing what the terms are of bringing Pompey in, because Pompey says, not only I'm first of all Hyrcanus is king, plus he divided Judea up into five parts. Judea was for a large part, many parts of Israel at the time were not settled by Jews. Just that Yanai Hamelach, he conquered all the lands, and he had these Jews, he had these people paying tribute to him. So Pompey's idea was, I'm going to limit Judea and to section off and remove the coastal lands, with the exception of Jaffa, and to what's today Jordan, the other side of the Jordan, the Decapolis, to give that away. And basically he divided things into five parts, only which two were ruled by Jewish leaders, the Galil and the Judea area. Now, when that happened, so Aristobulus decided, that's it, he's going to fight. So, you just see when the next one. So, he goes ahead and he goes back to Jerusalem to try to put up a stand. But when Pompey comes with his army, he loses a heart. And or maybe he realized it wasn't the right time. So he ended up, he was taken in by Pompey as slaves or whatever, captured to be taken back to Rome with Pompey. I believe he escapes on the way back, comes back, tries to form another army to fight Rome, and he gets caught again. And that's going to take us into that's probably going to end up over here. Just what's the next one? Okay, this is how they divided up Israel at the time, Judea at the time. The bright orange is really where the Jews lived. So you had Jerusalem and its environs, and then you had a little bit on the other side of the Jordan, and then you had the Galilee. But the Samaritans were given, that part was taken off. And the Decapolis on the most of Jordan was taken off, and all the way up in the Syria area, that was also taken away from them. In terms of the five different provinces with five different leaders, let's just see what I have on the next one. And Hyrcanus became the king. Judea became a Roman client kingdom, which means that at the time, Judea still had their independence. They weren't part of the Roman Empire yet. They're not going to be for another few years. They just had to pay taxes. And what's next? Okay, so that's what we're going to pick up in the next time, because what's going to happen is we'll talk about the triumvirate. After the triumvirate, there's going to have falling out between Julius Caesar and Pompey. Pompey is going to run to Egypt to try to build up another army. Julius Caesar is going to chase after him, and at some point Julius Caesar is going to run into problems, and who's going to help him out? Antipater. So we're going to see this is going to all come back to that's for next time.